It's Friday!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Works better if I pop the mic up. It really does. There we go. Off and running on this Friday on the front porch. The last Friday on the front porch before Christmas 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you also go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room when this program is live. Monday through Friday from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time and 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Yeah, just run on over. If you've never done it before, pick yourself out a screen name and a password. It's free. It's easy. And if you have, well, just input it, and well, there, you'll be off and running. And if you show up right now, the early arrivers are waiting to greet you. That would be Faith Ann and Squeaky. Others, as the evening proceeds, you will, of course, be capably moderated by longtime indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky. Who, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave. He may be in and out of the room, though, because he's having his Christmas visit with his young minion. And, well, that's important and makes perfectly good sense to me. You'll also be moderated by pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. I don't know exactly what Sparky's status is, but like he said, he mentioned to me last night that he may need someone else to start the Friday on the front porch call, and so maybe if you're up for that, maybe Steve from Georgistan might be willing to so do. And if you want to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that takes place at the end of every week here, well, go on over to HeadOn.live, and there is a great big banner. It is in red, unmistakable red, and there's a button that says click here if you want to participate in the Friday on the Front Porch conversation, the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that takes place in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler elves. Just click the place that says click here, and you'll be off and running into the conversation. And after the week that we've had, I suspect it is going to be every bit as stirring as it was last week. Only we're going to take Tracy's advice and try really hard not to overtalk each other. Okie dokie. That's wonderful. So every program here at The Horn begins with thanks, and thanks going out this afternoon to our subscribers for the 20th day of the month, and that would be Dr. John out in New Mexico, and Vincent, and Carl, and Armand, and thank you for jumping in a la carte to Lady B, and to Samuel, and to Yuki. And what that means is that we have only $175 to go in fundraising to finish the week, which is well past awesome. That means it's hopefully makeable and doable. That's 17 and a half people at $10. I don't know how we're going to work out that half a person or 10 people at 1750, and all kinds of other cipher and permutations along the way. Sorry, had to do a little, had to tweak the audio for the Facebook feed. Which, by the way, this is the second night of doing that. I'm interested to see how people like it, what you think about it, and feel free to say, you know, share your thoughts. It's over at my page on Facebook, and eventually we will probably get to other platforms. But the problem is that to do that requires a software service. Arnold told me about it, and it comes in at about $500 a month, or not a month, I'm sorry, a year. So that's something we can work on down the road. For now, the video is only at Facebook. And as you can see, it's not exactly a compelling tableau. In other words, it's me in front of a wall and behind a microphone. And constantly saying to myself, you know what I'm saying to myself right now, don't you? Don't pick your nose. Don't pick your nose. Don't pick your nose. Don't. Nope, not gonna. can't be helped. And there's Anatole coming in for the into the chat room. Howdy, Anatole. And so the question becomes, where do we begin? You know, we had a pageant last night. I don't know what the viewership was like. Oh, one more program note. If you have not, I have Darlene's, and I have Ralph's mailing addresses to send to Paul from Parts Unknown, because Paul wants to send out the Paulmans tomorrow. Okay. I'm still missing two. So if you would like to get your Paulmans, and you kicked in the requisite amount requested by Paul, then send me your address so that I can get them out, so that Paul can get them out to you. So please. No, what I was saying, we had a pageant last night, and it was over on PBS, so it didn't come across as quite as much of a wrestling match as the others have heretofore. It was fairly decent for a while. But the second hour got kind of, I don't know, cranky. But the thing that I got watching it was that it all seems terribly, terribly scripted. Because remember, at one point it was the night for people to go after Joe Biden, and then it was time for people to go after Elizabeth Warren. Well, in this ongoing reality series that we call the Democratic debates, which, as I've said before, just a reminder, are not debates, but are, in fact, reality show pageants. Last night was Pete Buttigieg's time in the barrel. And he got, it was odd. His demeanor is interesting, because he's downright deferential when he's dealing with the menfolk. But boy, he gets sort of preachy whenever he's going after a woman. And in particular, there was there was this exchange, which I found interesting, having to do with fundraising.
So the mayor just recently had a fundraiser that was held in a wine cave full of crystals and served $900 a bottle wine. Think about who comes to that. He had promised that every fundraiser he would do would be open door, but this one was closed door. We made the decision many years ago that rich people in smoke-filled rooms would not pick the next president of the United States. Billionaires in wine caves should not pick the next president of the United States.
Mr. Mayor, you're...
If by the end of the weekend, there's not a punk band out there that's been formed called Billionaires in Wine Caves, or maybe Wine Cave Billionaires, there will be no justice in this universe. No. Wine caves with crystals? What's next? Sharks with freaking laser beams? Well, Mayor Pete didn't care for being called out on his little billionaire soiree, and so it was followed up with he followed up with a response.
Response. You know, according to Forbes magazine, I am literally the only person on this stage who's not a millionaire or a billionaire. So if this is important, this is the problem with issuing purity tests you cannot yourself pass.
Jesus, do you hear the wrestling audience? Ooh. Maybe that's what we've become. Wrestling nation. Where our political processes are nothing more than spectacle now. You think? Ooh. Woo! Woo! Jerry Beads.
If I pledged never to be in the company of a progressive Democratic donor, I couldn't be up here. Senator, your net worth is 100 times mine. Now, supposing that you went home feeling the holiday spirit, I know this isn't likely, but stay with me, and decided to go...
Smartass.
Go on to PeteForAmerica.com. And give the maximum allowable by law, $2,800. Would that pollute my campaign because it came from a wealthy person? No, I would be glad to have that support. We need the support from everybody who is committed to helping us defeat Donald Trump. We would like to bring in everyone, but obviously, Senator Warren, I'd like to give you a chance to respond.
I do not sell access to my time. I don't do call time with millionaires and billionaires.
Sorry, as of when, Senator?
I don't meet behind closed doors with big dollar donors. And look, I've taken one that ought to be an easy step for everyone here. I've said to anyone who wants to donate to me, if you want to donate to me, that's fine. But don't come around later expecting to be named ambassador, because that's what goes on in these high dollar fundraisers. I said no, and I asked everybody on this stage to join me. This ought to be an easy step, and here's the problem. If you can't stand up and take the steps that are relatively easy, can't stand up to the wealthy and well-connected when it's relatively easy when you're a candidate, then how can the American people believe you're going to stand up to the wealthy and well-connected when you're president and it's really hard?
Judy.
Senator, I've got to respond. Mr. Mayor, we're going to give you one more chance to respond. If you can't say no to a donor, then you have no business running for office in the first place. But also, Senator, your presidential campaign right now, as we speak, is funded in part by money you transferred, having raised it at those exact same big-ticket fundraisers you now denounce. Did it corrupt you, Senator? Of course not. So to denounce the same kind of fundraising guidelines that President Obama went by, that Speaker Pelosi goes by, that you yourself went by until not long ago, in order to build the Democratic Party and build a campaign ready for the fight of our lives, These purity tests shrink the stakes of the most important election.
Judy.
Purity tests. I don't think saying that you're not going to have fundraisers in crystal-lined wine caves with billionaires slurping away on $900 a bottle Ripple is a purity test. If it's a test of any sort, it's a test of who it is you want to give access to in your campaign, and should you prevail in your presidency. And this did not, at least in my eyes, this did not help Pete Buttigieg. His lecturing tone toward a brilliant woman. Elizabeth Warren, meanwhile, did have a nice rejoinder when someone brought up the issue of age.
Senator Warren, you would be the oldest president ever inaugurated. I'd like you to weigh in as well.
I'd also be the youngest woman ever inaugurated.
Now, see, that's a great line, but that goes to my point. These are canned. These are as predetermined as any wrestling match. That was a line waiting for a question. It just like her criticism of the wine cave billionaires was prepared. You know what would make for an interesting actual something approaching debate? A debate in which none of the candidates had any idea of the questions they were going to be asked. Because that's really the test of a president, isn't it? Being able to deal with things on the quick, on the fly, as they arise. And not being, I mean, sure, you prepare policy and all of that. But the stuff that defines the mettle of a president are the responses that president provides at moments unanticipated and unlooked for. Back to Elizabeth Warren.
I believe that President Obama was talking about who has power in America, whose voices get heard. I believe he's talking about women and people of color and trans people and people whose voices just so often get shoved out. And for me, the best way to understand that is look at how people are running their campaigns in 2020. You know, I made the decision when I decided to run not to do business as usual. And now I'm crowding in on 100,000 selfies. That's 100,000 hugs and handshakes and stories. Stories from people who are struggling with student loan debt, stories from people who can't pay their medical bills, stories from people who can't find childcare. Now, most of the people on the stage run a traditional campaign, and that means going back and forth from coast to coast to rich people and people who can put up $5,000 or more in order to have a picture taken, in order to have a conversation, and in order maybe to be considered to be an ambassador.
Thank you, Senator Warren.
Those selfies, no, I want to finish this. Those selfies cost nobody anything. And I get it. In a democracy, we all have a lot of different points of view, and everybody gets one vote. But here's the thing. People who can put down $5,000 to have a picture taken don't have the same priorities as people who are struggling with student loan debt or are struggling to pay off medical debt. I'm running a campaign where people whose voices get heard, We can't have,
thank you, Senator Warren.
We can't have people who can put down $5,000 for a check drown out the voices of everyone else.
Thank you, Senator
they
Warren.
They don't in my campaign, and they
Mayor
won't
Buttigieg.
In my White House.
Hard to argue with that. There was one other extraordinary moment that deserves mention. And that was when, lo and behold, mirabile dictu, Bernie Sanders spoke up for the rights of the Palestinian people. That almost never happens in mainstream American politics, because this country so thoroughly fetishizes Israel. But Bernie did say, we can't just be about being pro-Israel, we have to be pro-Palestinian as well. And something even as little as that mention is a big, big deal. Tom Steyer made it to the debate stage because, well, what we need is Tom Steyer. Just ask Tom Steyer; he'll tell you. Are you seeing his ads? Because I've seen the latest one, and he made what an odd thing to be running on, especially as a Democrat. Term limits. And he says, everybody knows we need term limits. I hate those universal assertions, especially when they are universal assertions of things that cannot be demonstrated to be universal. And no, everybody doesn't know we need term limits. And every time I see that ad, cranky old white man, right? I yell at the TV, no, Tom, we don't all think we need term limits. Because those things are so manifestly undemocratic. The idea that you're going to impose an artificial timeline on someone who may turn out to be a very talented legislator. Well, I'm sorry, you've been here 6 years. It's time to go. I realize that you have an IQ that's higher than that of Albert Einstein, and that you've pushed brilliant legislation for the 6 years you've been here. But well, that's just too damn bad. That's what term limits are. Term limits say that the American people are not fit to choose when to get rid of their elected representatives. And as I've argued for years, the two-term limit on a president is probably the worst political decision that we have made structurally in this country in the last 100 years. Because it means that one of these days, we're going to need a president who can serve a third term. And we're not going to be able to do that, because we've got a term-limited president. What happens if you've got a Congress, and the Congress is actually getting things done, and all of a sudden, you lose that effective Congress because Tom fucking Steyer wanted term fucking limits? What happens then? Did he focus group that? How did he land on that as something with which to try to motivate voters. You want term limits? The most effective term limit is voter participation. For instance, back at home in my little county, when we have an off-year primary, in that primary election, or that primary process, it's not unusual to see participation at around the 34% mark. So that means that 34% of the eligible voters are going to the polls. And in turn, the people who are elected or who win that primary process are winning on the strength of 17.1% of the eligible voters in my county. It's not some pernicious political process that keeps people in elected positions, according to Tom Steyer, longer than they're supposed to be. Rather, it is the failure of the people to participate in their own self-governance. So I hope if you see that Tom Steyer term limits ad, that you won't be hoodooed into thinking that it's a valid position, because it is not. Don't be seduced by a billionaire. I don't think there's much risk of it. Trying to fundamentally reshape the Congress itself. Stop telling us how to think about term limits, Bob. Yeah. So just a few things to get us going. Toward the end of last night's program, and by the way, I'm sorry that I'm sort of, if you're watching the video, I'm sorry that I'm sort of all over the place here. You can't really see all of what's going on here. I got a video mixer to monitor. I've got one laptop to monitor, another laptop to monitor, another device to monitor, and it's also that I'm not constantly sitting here making like the Wizard of Oz and doing the computer equivalent of yanking levers all the time. Steve in New York says, I'm sorry, notwithstanding the WWE feel to this pageant, I'm sorry, but I cannot stand Pete Buttigieg. I find him the very definition of obfuscatory, disingenuous, and smarmy. You know, with the caveat that if he's the nominee, I'll vote for him. Plain and simple. I can say that about everybody. Jesus, even Tulsi. Oh, that hurts. That hurts. As to term limits, Stephen New York says, I think it's much more basic. Real democracy is a double-edged sword. You get the leaders you deserve, good or bad. Yeah, it's kind of like that line from the Christmas song, I Believe in Father Christmas, Greg Lake. Hallelujah, Noel, be it heaven or hell, the Christmas we get, we deserve. It's kind of like that with politicians, too. Term limits ultimately absolve the people in a democracy from responsibility. Isn't absolving the people of responsibility the most undemocratic thing you can do in a democracy? Well, it's not only undemocratic, it's anti-democratic. It's how you get to a state of not having any democracy. Randy in PA says, what's the story with Mayor Pete Buttigieg and the McKinsey multinational corporation or think tank? Well, that stuff came out last week, and it looks like he did some pretty anodyne stuff because McKinsey finally told him he could release his client list and talk vaguely about the work that he did. He did work for the Environmental Protection Agency. He did consulting work for the Natural Resources Defense Council. And let's see. Albert in Rhode Island says, Bob, when was the last time a real presidential debate was held? Well, when the League of Women Voters do it, it tends to be a little bit more serious. And speaking of which, there's a story from a few days ago, and people are having having rather a high old time with it, because right on time and quite predictably, the man baby in the White House, back on Monday, in a tweet said, the so-called Commission on Presidential Debates is stacked with Trump haters and never Trumpers. 3 years ago, they were forced to publicly apologize for modulating my microphone in the first debate against Crooked Hillary. So he's sort of telegraphing that he's too much of a chicken shit to participate in debates in 2020. Because chicken shit god emperors don't do debates. He doesn't want to do a debate unless it's rigged, his word, in his favor. As president, the debates are up to me. No, they're not. Dumbass. And there are many options, including doing them directly and avoiding the nasty politics of this very biased commission. I'll make a decision at an appropriate time, but in the meantime, the Commission on Presidential Debates is not authorized to speak for me or ours. The commission never apologized to Nitwit Nero, and two, it's not full of never Trumpers. He's just a paranoid chicken shit. Pure and simple. The commission is stacked, and I don't mean like in a good way, like Stormy Daniels. She reminded me of Ivanka. Yeah. So, well, did anyone expect him to participate? Instead, he'll have a debate with himself and run some grift like he did back when he was in the primary process. Eesh. So we've got, I think we've got a lot to work with this evening. And I have to get back into the chat room now because my browser just crashed. There we go. Other interesting things. Well, this is something I mentioned a few nights ago toward the end of the program. It was kind of a big deal. The other day they had confirmation hearings in the Senate for Trump's nominee to head the Office of Surface Mine Reclamation and Enforcement, I believe. And at that hearing, which took place in the Senate Natural Resources Committee, Joe Manchin, my senior senator, for good or ill, mostly ill, made a rather shocking statement. I'm trying to pull it up here real quick. In questioning in questioning the nominee, he asked about getting the funding restored for the NAS review of the healthcare peer-reviewed journal reports relating to the health impacts of mountaintop removal. That alone would have been surprising. But then he went on to say, and you might want to sit down for this if you've been listening to this program for a lot of years and you know the work of the AIC campaign in regard to the health impacts of mountaintop removal. I have come around on utilizing mountaintop mining removal methods, and I think the method has exceeded its useful life. No kidding. It's only taken 19, 20 years, but Joe Manchin, and that's still kind of weaselly and waffly to say that it's exceeded its useful life, but it's not a stirring endorsement of it, which is what he used to do. And he'd say things like, we've got to find balance, and what about the jobs? Now, is there a possibility that there's some sort of Dante-esque betrayal down the road? Sure. Anytime you're talking about Joe Manchin, that's always a possibility. But still, that is tectonic or titanic, depending on your preference for word choice. Another way is to say it's a big damn deal. Does it mean he's going to run out and introduce the AIC Act in the Senate? Probably not. But here's the thing. That surprising declaration from Joe Manchin would never have happened this week without you, without us. That is the direct result of tireless, relentless grassroots activism on the last fraying thread of a dry-rotted shoestring. We didn't have the resources. We don't have the resources of the big greens, and the big greens are not prone to help. That's been a problem for years. But we take our nickels and our pennies, and we use them judiciously to go to Washington, D.C., and we've been in the offices of practically every Democratic senator there, some who aren't there anymore, and even some Republicans. And because we have done that work, and because you have supported that work, this amazing moment has come to pass. And it means, hopefully, that we will get nearer to the day when the poisoning of Appalachia finally comes to a close and states like West Virginia are allowed to enter the future and the sustainable renewable energy economy. Isn't that kind of fascinating to ponder? That it has taken 19 years and that it has taken lives? You know, when I read that quote, like I said, I'm always guarded in my responses to anything from Joe Manchin. But the first person I thought of was Judy Bonds, who, as she lay dying from a cancer that probably began in her body because she lived in the shadow of mountaintop removal, as she lay dying, she said two words: fight harder. There's a history of strong women in the hills and hollers of West Virginia. And Judy Bonds has a place right beside the memory of Mother Jones. You know, the headquarters of Coal River Mountain Watch down in Nayoma, West Virginia, is named the Judy Bonds Sustainability Center. And they do magnificent things down there. I mention them every night. They're raising industrial hemp. They run the facility on solar power. They raise a community garden. They serve as an in-gathering point for toxic, discarded tires. And they work on the thinnest of fractions of what the big greens do. But 19 years of protests and marches and hearings, time spent away from family, time spent sleeping on floors, people arrested in acts of civil disobedience. And finally, as 2019 crawls toward its ignominious end, the barest of indications that we're winning in an admission from the mouth of Senator Joe Manchin. Now, this doesn't mean that I'm going to go out and get Joe's picture tattooed on my ass or anything. No, I'm not quite that kind of a fanboy yet, because eventually there will still be an impeachment trial for Donald Trump in the Senate. And I'll be surprised if Joe Manchin doesn't mugwump and vote with the Republicans. It will be sickening, but it won't be surprising. But I like being able to talk about little victories. And that was one. That was one. And like I said, we've got other stuff to catch up with. I like to call this a tale of two Nazis. The story comes from Agence France-Presse, so it is fairly reliable. Back during the Second World War, there was a man named Reinhard Heydrich. And he wasn't as high up in the Nazi infrastructure as your Goerings and your Goebbels and your Himmlers and Hesses and whatnot. He was roughly the equivalent of a colonel. But it was Heydrich who hosted a meeting, a conference, at a place called Wannsee near Berlin on January the 20th, 1942. And it was at Wannsee where they finalized the final solution and came up with the industrial approach to exterminating Jews and undesirables, people with birth defects and people who, men who were gay, that sort of thing. Later on, Reinhard Heydrich was transferred to Prague, where he became known as the Butcher of Prague. And he became so vicious, and he was so vicious and so hateful that it was worth the effort of Britain's secret special operations executive to train what were then known as Czechoslovak agents who assassinated him with an anti-tank mine on May 27th, 1942. His body came back to Berlin, and he was interred in the Invalidenfriedhof, a military cemetery there. After the Second World War, when Berlin was split, it was that cemetery was in the no man's land. And eventually the markers were taken off of his and other Nazis' graves, but they were not disinterred. And everybody kind of knew where the grave was. Well, according to Agence France-Presse this week, in the night between last Wednesday and Thursday, not this week, but last week, anti-fascists dug up Reinhard Heydrich and dealt with his remains. A police spokesman in Berlin has said that an investigation's been opened with charges of disturbing a burial site. It's hard not to look at that and think, good. So that's one Nazi. We have to come back here to Merca for the other Nazi. That other Nazi, because this is the time of year for remembering it, the other Nazi, he was a Colonel Pieper, P-I-E-P-E-R, and he was the German officer who ordered the Malmedy massacre. When American soldiers, having been caught and overrun in the beginning phases of the Battle of the Bulge, which happened at this time of year in 1944, and which went on to claim one of my relatives, Well, the soldiers who had initially been overrun were captured, and because I'm sorry, it's not Peeper, it's Piper, P-E-I-P-E-R. Joachim Piper, an SS Standartenführer. He was the one who gave the order to slaughter those captured Americans. And so now, with the 75th anniversary of the Battle of the Bulge upon us, the United States Army. You know, we talked last night about the fact that Senate Republicans miraculously made legislative language about screening recruits for white nationalists disappear. Well, lo and behold, in its commemoration of the 75th anniversary of the Battle of the Bulge, the United States Army featured what? A photograph of General McAuliffe, who, upon being told to surrender, demanded that he surrender by the Germans, sent that famous one-word reply, nuts. No. Pictures of some of the young men who fought to the last bullet. A picture of the massacre. No and no. How about a picture of a famous survivor of all of that, a young kid from Indianapolis named Kurt Vonnegut, who survived the Battle of the Bulge and was walked, marched to a prison camp and eventually transferred to Schlachthaus 5 in Dresden, where he witnessed the firebombing of that city. The United States Army featured a photograph of SS Standartenführer Joachim Piper, an SS colonel, on its webpage. And I don't know about you, but I find that to be sickening. But it's all of a piece. I haven't mentioned it, but last Saturday, of course, was the Army-Navy football game. The 120-some-odd year of it. Well, our little Nazi problem was on display there. Because in the ESPN broadcast, some cadets and midshipmen displayed the WP white power symbol on live television. They will, of course, claim that they were only playing the circle game, which is why white supremacists and Nazis and the like use that symbol, because it can be claimed that it isn't the white power symbol that they themselves have said it is. It's just a game, the best example of which is in a sitcom from way back before, what was the name of it? The guy who played Walter White was in that comedy before He was Walter White in Breaking Bad. The research department will have that in short order. And remember the 2017 survey from Military Times, where 25% of those surveyed said yes, they had come across white supremacists and white nationalists? In their time in the military? We got problems. We got significant problems. Brian Cranston. Thank you, Steve, from Georgia Stan. Brian Cranston, yes. And there's some other stuff, some fun stuff, just because I can't resist. You know that as a cranky Gen Xer, you know that I despise the term influencer. Oh, she's an influencer on Instagram. Remember, that's what Aunt Becky wanted her daughters to be. When she tried to buy their way into, well, not tried, did buy their way into college. Well, there was an influencer named Elise Parker, and she's been a dedicated vegan for 5 years, and she takes pictures of herself holding a cup while sitting on her counter next to some trailing ivy vine and stuff. And so the reason people followed her on Instagram is because, well, other vegans followed her to see her fabulous vegan life. And, among other things, you know, she talked about her problems on Instagram. She said she had been addicted to Adderall. She took the Adderall to lose weight. And then she became a vegan. And, how do you not know what you're getting into here? So there she is. She's a vegan influencer, and she declares that she's going to take the 30-day carnivore diet because she wanted to lose some weight or whatever. And apparently she didn't know what carnivore meant. It meant eating nothing but meat for 30 days. Suffice to say that the her vegan followers, whom she influences over on Instagram, were not amused. How could you? Yeah. And she said she was living a healthier, more vibrant life on eating plant-based foods. She got 700,000 subscribers on YouTube and 200,000 on Instagram. Things were really swimming along. And then she declared she was doing the carnivore diet. Five years of vegan, and now she's going to sit down and have a big old whopping steak. She said, being vegan for almost 5 years, I know what it's like to lose myself in the identity of diet culture and lose true open-mindedness. I'm just curious. I'm a firm believer in experiencing things firsthand and getting a real feel for what something's all about before I form a personal opinion on it. The carnivore diet first came into my awareness when a close friend shared with me all of the benefits that he was experiencing by eating this way. And then her followers found out. So you have to slaughter infants in order to feel like yourself? Doesn't sound that beautiful to me. You're literally the entire reason I went vegan, and for years I watched your videos. The bulk of your money was made off you being vegan, and you really just turned your back on everyone? Wow, if you become vegan because somebody else is a vegan on YouTube, brother, sister, that's on you. Sorry we have to unfollow. So disappointing. Food is more than lifestyle. It's a sign of respect for life. Choose compassion. Another one said, this is so dumb, unfollowing due to lack of compassion. I guess there's a good side, though. She says that since she started eating meat again, that she feels more mentally clear, focused, wholesome, and healthy. Yeah. Ah, good for you. Have another cheeseburger. David in South Carolina, Stan. Vegan Adderall. I wonder if Adderall is vegan or what would one need to go to natural Peruvian dancing powder to qualify? Well, you know, I think your Bolivian dancing powder is in fact vegan. Yeah, Brother Deacon Asa says, no wonder Elise Parker is misleading her gram followers. She's one of them Jews, hashtag Juku. And here's an interest, Malcolm in the Middle. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Brother Deacon Asa says, interesting little tidbit for the brethren and sistren. Influencer has the same Latin root as the word influenza. Well, now, going back to term limits, Lee in New York says, term limits are double-edged. Can you imagine Congress without McConnell, Rafael Cruz, Steve King? That's what makes it appeal to some. But for every one of those you lose, you're going to lose a Bernie and an Elizabeth Warren and an Auntie Maxine and an Adam Schiff. Reason enough. Randy in PA says a term limit on the presidency may have been the only way we get rid of overpowering Trump. A president sometimes achieves his full power when after 6 or 7 years he's been busy stacking various commissions to his liking. That's true. But I still say that the downside is that one day we're going to be in a real crisis. Can you imagine telling FDR... Let's see, he gets elected in 32, takes office in 33. Can you imagine telling FDR he had to leave office just because he'd served two terms with us in the teeth of the beginnings of World War II, especially with the war in the South Pacific was not a foregone conclusion? When it was possible for us to lose. Because that would have happened if we'd had that amendment in effect in World War II. Sorry, FDR, you're doing a great job and everything, but man, you got to go. Oh, wait, Darlene in Connecticut. Don't tell us how to love our influencers, Bob. As to the vegan, Lee in New York says, she only eats animals that only eat plants. Moo, y'all. Matt in San Francisco says, I've been a vegetarian for 27 years. Everyone else, eat whatever the fuck you want. Yeah, I'll bet Matt didn't have to become a vegetarian because of, well, there weren't Instagram influencers back then. I'm down with however anybody wants to eat. But trying to make a, well, see, there's the religious vegetarianism of the Jains and the Hindus, and there's the vegetarianism of people who just prefer plant-based foods, and there's the vegetarianism of people who have medical necessity. And then there's the veganism, and those people tend. I mean, if you're being influenced by a vegan influencer on social media, you're not so much into a diet as you are into a dogma. At least as far as I can tell. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate it, man. I do indeed. Notes coming from Albert. I like your idea of a debate where the participants don't know about the questions or topics. Would any American presidential nominee have the courage to agree to one? Never in a million years. Kyle says, wait, what? Joe Manchin pressing for the end of the mountaintop removal? What kind of parallel universe are we living in? Well, we're not all the way to him calling for the end of it. Kyle says, seriously, though, if you can get Joe Manchin to say that we're making serious headway... Say that, we're making serious headway. That's amazing. It's about fucking time to end mountaintop removal, though. Don't stop fighting, Bob. We can't stop fighting. That's the only way we win, by never giving up. Thank you, Dave. Malcolm in the middle, yes. And, yeah, Kyle was as shocked as I am. Jesus Christ, is the army admitting that they're complete fascist sympathizers or what? There's reason to be worried along those lines. Indeed, indeed. Yeah, everybody knew Malcolm in the Middle but me. Thanks, Tracy. So here we are at the top of the hour. We still got $175 to raise to finish this December week. And I guess tomorrow is the winter solstice. The most wonderful day of the year. And, well, it'd be great if we could finish the week on schedule. 175 to go. And let's check in at the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves and see what's going on with Sparky. Hey, Sparky, what's happening, man?
Oh, like I told you, I got the minion over here helping me today.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, he stacked all my firewood, and then we had a little project. Went to my neighbor's. There's a cyclone fence that runs between our property, and then right on the other side of the cyclone fence, years ago they had a pot enclosure in there.
Mm-hmm.
That grew pot out.
Well, I was going to ask you if that's what I was going to ask you if that was what pot enclosure meant. I thought maybe it was a technical term, but no, they were growing weed, well, right?
Yeah, it was set up to be the length and width and everything. They had a permit and the whole thing. And the guy that was living there, they're getting a divorce now, but the guy that was living there was growing it for his mother. She had cancer. So anyway, the enclosures, the wooden fence that they put up is all fell down and rotten away. So I asked her if I could haul it off or I'll burn it in my wood stove. So he helped me cut it up and we tossed it over the fence into my yard today. So
that's good. That's good minion work.
And then I can just mess with it as I want.
Right.
He's goofing around in the rock shop now, pulling out stuff that my dad had.
Oh, wow.
He's pulled out a little mini airbrush thing for painting. Found some modeling clay.
He'll have a blast.
He loves messing around in that place. So that's what I've been up to, except had a little project to do yesterday. We had we get bottled water, mm-hmm. and our dispenser leaked all over the kitchen floor.
Oh, beautiful.
Overnight, and about 4 gallons of water. We cleaned that up, and then I called the bottled water people. I said, I want a new dispenser. I need some more water. So the guy said, well, you want an electric one? And I said, sure. Well, right near where the water is going to be, there's an old junction box for an oven that was in there. So I had looked inside it, and I figured, oh, man, I can hook a receptacle up in here. So I did some electrical work again for once.
Project.
Put in a plug. So now we got a cold water dispenser.
Oh, I just saw there's been an announcement of a death of an iconic NASCAR figure. Did you see that earlier?
No, I've been busy.
Junior Johnson, 88 years old. Won 50 races as a driver and 6 top-level championships as an owner.
Well, they'll have a big deal at the Daytona 500 to honor him, probably.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. I mean, he was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, he's in the NASCAR Hall of Fame and everything.
Yeah. I mean, doesn't he go far enough back that he actually raced on the beach in Daytona?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's...
He's one of the original founding members of old-timers.
Yeah, one of those guys who learned from the guys who were running Shine.
Yeah, like Earnhardt's grandfather.
Yeah.
And Richard Petty's father. A bunch of... the heritage has gone down the line with race car drivers. Some families.
In the left turns.
Except when they're on a
road course.
Oh, and the Roval.
Well, it looks... good evening, Steve. How are you this evening?
Hey, Bob. What's going on? I didn't mean to cut it.
Oh, no. That's fine. That's fine. It's good to hear from you. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. Hope Duncan's doing okay.
I'm doing just fine.
Good to hear.
Sounds like it's been down
today. That makes it a great day.
Sounds like it's downright productive. And I can happily announce that the emergency Tootsie Pop remains untouched.
Why are you doing video on Facebook, Bob?
Because I'm in a place where I can.
That's what I figured. Did you say that? I missed the beginning of the show if you said something about it.
No, not really.
That was a silly question, Sparky. You know, why does a dog lick itself, right?
Oh, thanks. Thanks. You're helping, Billable. Yeah, you're fucking awesome, buddy.
Do we all
buddy.
Need to hook up our cameras? Yeah, hell, I've got one.
No, he's on Facebook Live.
Okay, good.
I'm trying to ruin the...
Yeah, what I'm doing, Sparky, what I'm doing is experimenting to see if it's worth doing video. Now, I mean, this is all very bare bones. Like I said, there's nothing behind me. It's just me sitting in a chair and not even looking at the camera half the time.
Yeah, you can't even compete with John Brudovo.
No, John's got a set and everything, and little doodads and stuff. But you know what, John Brudovo doesn't have?
What?
Yuzu. I got my traveling bottle of Yuzu hot sauce here.
Oh,
courtesy of my pusher, Tracy.
Did you get a speed upgrade, Bob?
What do you mean?
Internet speed. You used to be what, 3 down and
I'm not at home. I'm not at home.
Oh, okay, all right.
I'm in Alabama.
On the road again.
Yeah, I'm in Alabama.
Hey, Bob. I'm one of the lucky 13 watching you right now on Facebook Live.
I show 14.
Oh, four. Okay, they spoke too soon. 13 All right, was a very lucky number for me last Friday.
Whose alarm's going off?
Oh, I don't know. Hold on.
It's Rick's.
Somebody stealing your car, Rick?
I don't think so. It's not a car in the parking lot.
It's all about the cat, man.
It's not about the cat.
The cat triggered the alarm. That's why it is
probably
about the cat.
Probably.
You know, I don't know if it did.
13 was lucky for you last week, you say?
Yeah, I golfed. Got a hole in one.
Did you really?
I did. Yeah. Yeah, there were four witnesses, including myself.
So did you go and buy drinks for everybody in the clubhouse like you're supposed to?
I did, of course, yeah. Yeah, there weren't that many people in the clubhouse.
You know what the odds are in that? Jesus, bro, you should have played lottery that night.
Did you report it?
What are the odds of hole in one?
Did you report it to Johnny Walker so that you can get your hole in one goodie bag?
You can record it to Johnny Walker? What's that?
Yeah, you report your hole in one to Johnny Walker and you get a goodie bag.
Oh, how long do you have to do that?
I'm not sure, but I mean, I think you have to provide an attested scorecard, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Right. They just take your word on it, or can any?
Well, no, it's a test.
I got a hole in one.
It's attested.
I got a certificate from the club that was witnessed by my three other players in my foursome, and
there you go. Good.
But it was a beautiful day. It was a beautiful, like, kind of a wintry day in Southern Cal, probably a high of maybe 60.
So, how long a hole was it?
It was only a 90 yard hole.
Only
par three. And
pitching wedge, sand wedge, nine iron, what?
Well, I was going to hit a pitching wedge, and I tend to I use my power and overpower things and hit things over the green if I use too much club. So my buddy Brett, who was playing with me, who's a very good instructor, he's not a pro or anything, but he really golfs well, and he's only been doing it for like 2 years. He said, no, dude, here, borrow my 60 degree wedge.
Yeah, lob wedge.
Lob wedge, yeah. Yeah, and he said, okay, just, you know, swing easy. Don't overpower it, but put your, you know, just lay it, you know, lay the club flat on the ground behind the ball and take a, you know, in a normal swing and just hit it and get it high. And the thing hit like 10 feet away from the pin. It hit the green, obviously, and then took a couple of bounces and bounded into the cup. I couldn't believe it. Everybody went nuts.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
That's better than the video I saw last week of the dude. He was teeing off next to the hole ran along. It ran to the right of a water hazard, and he teed off and just brought a duck down.
Oh no!
Yeah, whack, whack. It went whack, quack. Oh my thud. God!
That's kind of like Randy Johnson's famous fastball that hit a bird that was like flying across his field as he was throwing to home plate.
Yeah,
totally like destroyed the thing. Just feathers left. Jeez, no, but it was exciting and interestingly earlier on in the round I got like a birdie by chipping in from like on the other side of a cart path and kind of chipping up to an elevated green. I didn't even see that go in. But I like, you know, hit it perfectly, and it you know, bounced in after a couple of bounces, and everybody it was going crazy for that one. So then, like later, you know, like nine holes later, I get the hole in one, and I've had a couple of good comebacks in pool too. I was like should have lost both matches. I came back and nine ball is down like 28-22. And all she had to do get was 31. I needed 31 as well. And I ended up doing a combo on the nine ball to get the break. And that was 28-24. Then I got a couple of balls on the break, and then I was on my way. And then I came back from a 2-1 deficit in nine ball to help the team get to the next round of the playoffs. I won the match like 3-2. And then I was down just on Wednesday night in nine ball. This is to get to the tournament next month, which we managed to get to, fortunately. And I was down like, I was playing a level 7 player. I'm a level 4 player. He needs to get 55 before I get 31. He had me down like 31-10. All he needs is 55. And I somehow played him even the rest of the match and came back and won like, I got 31, he got 51. So our team, you know, we have one playoff team, nine balls in the playoffs now, and our eight ball team is playing Monday night for the right to get into the tournament of champions. So we're it's the second round of league playoffs. So I've had some good luck here athletically.
Yeah, no kidding. So I want to go back to the hole in one. What kind of ball were you using?
It was a Slazenger 9.
Nice.
Yeah. And I was gonna like clean the ball up after the hole in one, and the guy said, no, just leave it alone. Do not hit that ball anymore.
No, that's magic.
Yeah, yeah. And interestingly, the club that my friend let me use, Brett, he hit a hole in one with that same 60 wedge on February 11th of this year. So he's going to give me the club after the first of the year, after Christmas, because he's getting a new wedge anyway. And he's going to pass on the wedge to me. And basically, I agree that if I'm in a group of people that gets a hole in one, then I give it to whoever got the hole in one.
Oh, what a cool little tradition to get started.
I think so. Yeah, that's very cool. Very cool. So
that's incredible, bro. That in of it in itself, that you hit a hole in one.
I couldn't believe it. It was like surreal. I mean, I'd never hit such a perfect shot in my life. And I knew it was good, but I didn't know it was going to be that good. And we all saw it. Like sometimes you can't see the hole in one because you're too far from the pin, you know. and we saw this thing hit like short and then take another hop or two and go in. It's like, oh my God. I didn't even react at first. I didn't know what to do.
So did you leave much of a ball mark?
Yeah, it left. I had to repair it. Yeah, yeah. Well, it was pretty big ball mark because I hit it pretty high, you know. But this is kind of funny because I played like all the time golf from maybe ages 10 till 20. And then I moved to California, like around 20, 21 years of age. I haven't played at all in California. And I used to, you know, belong to a country club with my dad because that was one of the perks of his job. And I played like probably, you know, five times a week during the summer and played in the fall and was on the golf team in high school. You know, I wasn't like varsity or anything. I just picked it up again.
Nice.
You know, when I went to Palm Springs in September. So I've only played like maybe four or five rounds since
in the numbers game,
yeah.
In the odds game, is that the equivalent of almost hitting the lottery?
No. The lottery's 1 in 292 million.
Oh, okay.
So there's probably hole in ones every day then.
Oh, there are. Yeah. I'll be part of the horn research team here.
Well, you've got a name for your club thing.
Okay.
Randy in PA has dubbed it the Brotherhood of the Traveling Club.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, isn't that good?
I'm impressed, brother. I'm proud of
you. Brotherhood of the Traveling Club. That is awesome. Thank you, Randy. That's very, very fitting. Yeah, that's great. Brotherhood of the Traveling Club. I like that. Yeah. Or Brotherhood of the Traveling Wedge would work as well.
By the way, Kyle noting, so I'm not the only liberal who follows NASCAR. Well, that makes me a little better. Also, thanks for all you do, Bob, for this Friday on the front porch. Been dealing with some bullshit from work, not of my own making, and this show really kind of helps get my mind off it for a while because of the laughs and everything. Thank you. Well, thanks for being part of the community, Kyle. And Albert reminds us, Junior Johnson was the very first driver to become a NASCAR driver one night. His dad asked him to go fire up his still. Right after he did it, the still got raided by the cops, so he had to serve a prison sentence before his first pro race. Kyle says, Jesus Christ, Rick, congratulations. I'm just happy if I can hit the damn green from 90 yards out. No, yeah, see, I can be 90 yards from the green, and my next shot is into the lumber yard. It's in the lumberyard.
Yeah, it can be a frustrating game, you know. But I find that the 57-year-old Rick is a lot more patient than like the 20-year-old Rick that used to play a lot more, you know. And so I'm just out there for the fun, you know. I was just a beautiful, gorgeous day. Like you had these high clouds and, you know, sunny and just beautiful mountains in the background. We played on a course called Verdugo Mountains course. Or no, it's called, Shoal Canyon. So it's literally sits up in the foothills of the Verdugo Mountains.
God damn, yeah. It's a shame you didn't have a camera on there, Rick.
I know, Jesus. I know. I have an answer for thought, the odds. You know? The odds of a hole-in-one for an amateur are 12,500 to 1. For a tour professional, it's 2,500 to 1. So...
Hey, congratulations, Rick, on your hole-in-one. I'm just wondering...
Hey, man, thanks. Thanks.
are you allowed to smoke pot on the golf course in
California? Well, actually,
the questions that matter.
Let me explain for a minute. After the 11th hole, we did spark one up on the 12th hole, let's just say.
Hi, Sparky.
Is the 11th where you aced it?
That was the hole in one.
Yeah,
that
well, okay, you kind of yeah. gotta.
Yeah, I think so. Why not, you know? Like, you know, do a little Mother Nature. Why not, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, I'd never been in a golfing group that had one of the players, you know, hit a hole in one, let alone me get it. So that was really very cool. So, and the interesting thing is that we had a fivesome going at once, and Babs, who was in our fivesome, had to leave because she had to go work. We tried to convince her to, like, oh, come on, just play three more holes. And if she had played the, you know, the 10th, 11th, and 12th, she would have seen the hole in one at the 11th. But that's the way it goes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've come close, but I've never done it. I was within 4 inches of one once.
Yeah, I've been within a couple inches of one before the other day. Yeah, yeah. So that's why I wasn't on the rollicking front porch last Friday. And, it was a very good one from what I can tell so far. I've maybe listened to 2/3 of it.
Yeah, it was good, and people had good energy, and Tracy straightened us up and made us quit talking over each other.
There you go. And I noticed that one of the things that was brought up is, what if Pelosi just tables the articles after they're passed and doesn't pass them on to the Senate? And lo and behold,
here we are.
Like, right, her first press conference after the impeachment, she said, well, you know, I want to see what the Senate's going to do, because they don't seem like they're going to do an impartial trial.
No.
Now,
she's a tough old bird, didn't she?
Yeah. She's very tough. Now the question is, how long
did you see her giving her caucus the stink eye when they tried to clap about the bill being passed?
Oh yeah.
I mean, she waved that gavel at him and went, nope. With that.
Yeah, she really has a lot of authority. I mean, that it's too bad we weren't so fucking, you know, sexist in this country. She could have been our first president, possibly, or Hillary would have.
Well, she's going to go down in history as one of the best speakers, and one of the most authoritative speakers we have.
Yeah,
because now she's got Moscow Mitch and Nitwit Nero in stalemate now.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, like, what do you think they're going to haggle about, guys? Is it witness list? I mean, I think that would be part of it, right?
Chris, I think it's more about her just constantly playing and owning Trump. Because, see, he'd been shrieking for a while, I want a trial, I want to call Adam Schiff, I want to hear the whistleblower, we're going to have a fucking trial, I want a trial, I want to hear from Hunter Biden. I want, you know, basically being just a sort of idiotic Veruca Salt president. I was.
He's going to call the Smothers Brothers.
Yeah, right. Call, yeah. I want to call Cock Robin as a witness. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had him. They just about had him off the ledge with that, so that he would let them just do the cover up and make it go away, and then Nancy Pelosi does what she just did, and now he's in a froth again. Let me see if I can find the exact tweet, because it is, as with all his other stupidities, delightfully dumb. By the way, 79% of Democrats, 64% of Republicans, and 72% of independents say that Trump should let administration officials like Mulvaney and Pompeo and Bolton testify in a Senate trial. So today at 9:10 a.m., you know, this would just be pitiful if he wasn't such a horrible, horrible, pathetic excuse for a member of the human race.
I got impeached last night without one Republican vote being cast, with the do-nothing Dems on their continuation of the greatest witch hunt in American history. Now the do-nothing party want to do nothing with the articles and not deliver them to the Senate, but it's Senate's call.
And no, it's not, stupid. they can't consider legislation that's not before them.
Do nothing, my ass. We're going to toss your ass out of there, you fucker.
Well, I love a do-nothing Congress that produces 485 bills.
Yeah.
Imagine if they weren't do-nothing. It'd be 1,000. But none of them would be acted on because, well, Mitch McConnell.
He said he was a grim reaper.
Do nothing, my ass.
And the other
orange ass out of there.
Yeah. The other thing, and this is worth noting, we found out today that he literally got his talking points on Ukraine from Putin. Now, this isn't a conspiracy theory.
Everybody's just quiet. They're just kind of going, like,
oh,
huh?
Geez.
What the fuck? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, jeez.
And then, like, I told Bob last night on Facebook chat, I says, he'll start having fixation about garbage disposals now.
faucets as well, you know.
That'll be fun. Used to be. It's really, they're really noisy now, and you've got to, like, turn them on 10 or 15 times to get a banana peel down them. My God. I mean, because Nancy Pelosi.
Give yourself a cowbell there.
Thank you, Rick. I will.
I think, you know, he may have checkmated himself with Nancy. I really do. I mean.
Well, they're trying to goad him, Steve, into saying, fuck it, I'm going to come and testify.
I wanted to ask Rick, how long does he have before he has to see Nancy wire this procedure over?
I don't think there's any time limit.
There isn't.
I don't either.
The only thing that limits any of this is the life of the Congress.
Right, the term of the Congress. Yeah. Well, let's ask a different question. Was Mitch McConnell required to have a hearing after Obama nominated Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court? Under the Constitution, you would think he would have. So I think, you know, Nancy could say, well, you know, Mitch sat on the Garland nomination for, you know, until the end of Obama's term. So, you know, we do have an election coming up. So let's just wait and see after the election. Yeah. Then we'll take it up.
Let the people
decide.
Let
the American people.
Add more charges. Because, you know, he's going to screw up and do something stupid.
Yeah, well, exactly.
They're still investigating. It's an ongoing investigation.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, it's sort of like he was, the Russia interference was much worse in some ways than the Ukrainian thing. And yet he gets tagged on the Ukrainian thing, kind of like Capone. They couldn't get him on racketeering or murder, so they had to get him on tax evasion, you know?
And that's still in play as well, Rick, the tax evasion. There's no question. There's no doubt in my mind he's a tax evader. No question.
Yeah. Yeah, he probably is. He probably is. Whether the government is, you know, able to prove it.
Well, all this stuff is going to become, eventually it's going to become res judicata, and that means that the court orders will go final, and if he loses, then because. The Supreme Court decision on the subpoenas will be out toward the end of June, at the end of that term.
Mm-hmm.
And that means he becomes, if the outcome is not in his favor, he becomes impeachable over each of those the minute the Supreme Court decision is out. So you could,
right.
I mean, if I were Adam Schiff and Gerald Nadler,
mm-hmm.
and Nancy Pelosi, I would pull them aside and say, look, why don't you go ahead and draft articles based on these cases on the assumption that we win, and we can introduce them in committee the day after the orders are introduced. Because you know what you, I mean, you know what the subject matter of the lawsuits is. So why not?
Well, I think once the subpoenas are formally upheld or enforced by the Supreme Court, okay, once the decision of the lower court to enforce the subpoena is upheld by the Supreme Court, at that point they would set a certain amount of time to comply. Okay, maybe a reasonable period of time, maybe 10 days to comply. And then once that period that's set expires and the subpoenas still aren't complied with, then at that point, there is a, clearly an impeachable offense. But I mean, I think this whole idea about not claiming executive privilege, telling witnesses not to appear, you know, tweeting about witnesses during their live testimony. I mean, all that stuff is clearly, you know, obstruction and an abuse of power, you know.
Witness tampering, right?
Yeah, I think so. And so, I think Nancy's brilliant in terms of what she decided to do. She gave herself a little more time. Like, what's the rush? Now, on the other hand, The counter argument Republicans have been using as well. Look, if Trump is such a clear and present danger to the country, why are you withholding, you know, sending the articles of impeachment onto the Senate? So I don't think she can hold them indefinitely, you know, till the end of the term. I think politically that's infeasible, but I think she could probably get away with holding onto them for maybe till the middle of January. Maybe late January, but I don't see it much beyond that. You know, to try to use that
as far as McConnell, if you're McConnell, what's in your best interest? Get this over as quick as possible?
Yes.
So Trump can do his victory lap and keep doing it.
And let the pressure off of all the senators in play, the Republican senators that are on the hot seat, so to speak, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
Oh, and let me just interrupt for a second. For some reason or another, the Facebook video crashed. So there's no video running now for anybody who wonders why. That was kind of a pain in the ass, but these are things that we'll sort out as time goes by.
And you have your smartphone in your hand there, Bob, on the still frame of the Facebook. Were you trying to get it to work again using your phone or what?
No, I was reading the message saying what the hell happened to your video.
Oh, okay. Got it. All right.
But so I'm hoping
your accommodations in Alabama, Bob.
I was going to say, I'm hoping there will be an interest in the video and, maybe when I get back up there, it'll all be part of the crowdfunding campaign that has the horn in and all of that work built into it.
Okay.
Doing some fairly serious repairs to the mansion, expanding the studio enough that I can, because I'm using more space right where I am than I've got to use in my studio. That's the problem here. Because the camera would be right on top of me in the Fabulous Horn Studios right now. So we need to kind of bring the wall out a little further. But
hey Bob, if we're looking for flights around that June 6th, what dates should we be looking for?
I would look to, let me pull my calendar up here. I would look to be flying in on Thursday the 4th.
Okay.
And you can either fly out on the 7th or the 8th, but if you're flying out on the 7th, a lot of times the flights out of Charleston are very early in the morning. So, you know.
No, I'd like an extra day.
Yeah.
I'd probably do the 8th then. Okay, great. Cool. I'm going to look for those.
Yeah.
The 8th's the Monday, right? June 8th, Monday, June 8th.
And I think what we're looking at is an overall, because remember, this is about trying to make a significant growth change, for the horn too. I think it's going to work out to, $800 for an individual or $1,000 for a couple. And that takes in lodging and several meals and, you know, a big get together probably hire a band, you know, local bluegrass band, something like that. Maybe go on some hikes.
Hikes? Did someone say hikes?
I said hikes.
Hikes.
Hey, Tracy.
Hey.
So, I mean,
how you doing?
Doing good. And what we're going to need, I'm gonna try to have enough accommodations for 30 to 50 people.
Sounds great.
I think it could be. And I'll and Tracy, I'll scout out the gambling dens for Jan.
Yeah. Yeah, please.
I'll join you, Tracy. I'll join you at the casino, no doubt about that.
Well, it's not so much casinos. We've just got little slot machine joints on every corner.
I thought Jan likes blackjack. Is that right, Tracy?
No. She doesn't do cards.
Oh, okay. You do cards?
I play poker.
You play poker? Okay.
Yeah, she. Yeah. Tracy plays. What is it?
Mississippi Stud.
Mississippi Stud. Yeah.
I do blackjack, straight up.
Mississippi Stud.
Lots of queens. Lots of queens. Definitely lots of queens.
And let it ride when I, you know. So how's everybody doing? Is everybody ready for Christmas yet? Or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or
Pastafarian Day. Yeah.
You know.
Festivus.
Yeah.
Festivus for the rest of us.
The
Festivus isn't Festivus today? Or have we missed it already?
And tomorrow is the solstice, right? Did anybody check on that?
Yes, I think it
is. Yeah.
It's gotta be.
So I figured out what
Canada's wedding anniversary.
Oh, that it is, yeah. So I figured out what I think I'm going to do for the solstice. There's an old railroad bridge across the Tennessee River here, and there's a hiking path down to it. And the river faces almost due west, or it runs almost due west through here. And so I'm going to take my phone and hike that trail and hike out onto that old railroad bridge, unless it's really scary. and take some pictures of the dying sun.
Ooh. That will be lovely. Just be careful on those tracks, huh?
Well, no, the tracks are pulled up. It's just they do yoga out there now.
Hmm. Oh, it's safe then, Bob. Nothing could. What could go wrong?
Yeah, I mean, if people are out there doing downward dog on a bridge 100 feet above the Tennessee River, you know, come on.
White people.
Well, true. Now you can't be sure of that.
Mayonnaise and turkey sandwiches, right, Tracy?
Yeah, and on Wonder Bread.
Yeah, right. With pepper on it.
Yeah.
Downward Dog, I rented that movie for $19.99 last night.
$19.99, was it?
Yep.
Was it on that special channel?
Yeah.
What?
Wait a minute.
Oh, the what?
Yeah.
Well, I am on my way to get my car, drop off my car at the mechanic because my engine is not blown, of course, because I'm driving, but I need a new engine. So I am on my way to drop off my car and from driving from Agora Hills to, where am I going? North Hollywood on the Friday before Christmas.
Oh, God.
That's a little crazy.
Yay! Well, yeah, but I'm trying to get it back so I can work. Well, I really don't have to work next week because technically I actually have the guy that owns my taxi is pretty cool, and he is
you're breaking up pretty fierce, Tracy.
Yeah.
Are you driving, Tracy? You're breaking up.
Yeah. I think she's gone.
Well, remind me if she when she comes back, if she comes back, I want her to know that on the YouTube video on the Facebook video we had a milestone when I for the first time displayed and took a swig of the yuzu sauce.
But make sure that's recorded in Horn History, Bob.
Well, the thing is, it crashed. I don't know if it's going to save or not.
Oh, nuts.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you got to replay it then, reprise the moment.
Well, I can't, but it's down now. I don't know what went wrong.
I hear you.
Because everything went down. I had to restart the streamers and everything.
Not good.
I can see you, Bob. Oh, wait a minute. There you go.
So I wanted to ask a question of everybody, and how much translation that what happened in the UK with their elections transfer over to possibly 2020 here? Because it seems like Brexit ushered in Trump. Do you think that there's going to be any carryover effect?
Well, I mean, Brexit is... Brexit is so much its own thing. I don't know if it has that much transferability, Chris. Do you?
It's hard to say. I mean, I hope not. I really hope not. And I hope that I think we talked about Corbyn and what a horrible candidate he was. I hope it's not. But it's just one of those ripple effects that could give some momentum to it. You know, the nationalists and Stephen Miller's and all that. I'm worried. I'll just say I'm worried.
Well, there's also the part about, you got to remember, everything's on a continuum, if that's the right word. The situation, or the mindset more than a situation, that helped bring the Brexit movement into being had to do, I think, with it's like the age of Thatcher and the age of Reagan.
Yeah.
Coincided almost perfectly, although Thatcher was prime minister before Reagan was president.
Yeah.
But there was stupidity. We've gotten to the point with some of these people, voters, if you get up close, you can smell the stupid on their breath. I mean, that's how bad the situation is.
Scott, does it smell like sulfur, the stupid?
No, it's something that you don't smell very often. It's like that flower that blooms once every 21 years.
Oh, the corpse flower.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get all crazy.
What's that really smelly fruit that grows in the Philippines? What's the name? Did anyone know the name of that?
Well, I don't know, but I tried it once.
Durian.
Yeah.
Yeah, Southeast Asia.
But do you get what I'm saying? There's, for the last 40 years or so, there's been something in many places going on that seems to bring out the stupid in people and the angry and the stingy and the... You know, but as far as it translating over here, it wouldn't be a direct relationship. It would simply be there's a lot of that going around.
Right.
You know,
you look at Bolivia, you look at all of South America is crazy. You've got Eastern Europe, you've got the Philippines.
Well, and remember, Brexit was hastened along by virtue of the same kind of dirty acts and dirty actions and dirty actors that fucked up the 2016 election here. There was Russian fuckery at work.
What was that documentary, Bob? The Big Hack or The Great Hack?
The Great Hack.
Something? Say it again.
The Great Hack.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, have a look at that. Anybody listening on the replay or live or whatever, it'll spell it right out for you.
Do you think that they had anything to do with Duterte ushering? Because I think he was like one of the first ones.
Right? I don't know. I don't know if they were fooling around. It wouldn't be, it would surprise me if they didn't meddle to one degree or another in it.
Yeah, and Hungary and right.
Hungary, Poland, but particularly Hungary with Orban. That dude is a straight up fascist.
Oh God. He must be related to Gorka. Gotta be.
Well, I mean, probably distantly. we're almost into the third hour of the program, and we've been at $175. Thanks to Samuel and Yuki and Lady B, we got down to $175 to go to finish the week. We're still at that $175. It would be magnificent to finish the week off and not be looking at $375 on Monday. Because
how much? I'm sorry, Bob.
Oh, go ahead, Tracy. You're back.
No, it's been I wasn't sure if you guys could hear me. So what's the fundraising happening right now?
We're at $175 to finish.
$175. Okay. $25 challenge. Then let's call it Scott, what were you saying about fuckery and stinginess and stuff like that? Let's call it.
Oh, it I don't know.
No, you were saying how people are mean and stingy and
yeah, there's something in the air. There's something.
How about the anti Scrooge challenge?
Yes.
There you go. That works.
Because this will be the last Friday of the front porch before Christmas.
Right, and from a program note standpoint, live Monday, live Tuesday, probably not live on Christmas, then live Thursday, live Friday. And I will be filling in for Malloy on Monday and Thursday.
Is there going to be a front porch on Tuesday, Bob?
You know what? We could have a Christmas Eve on the front porch. That could be kind of fun.
Oh, that kind of be kind of fun.
I'll get my eggnog ready, yeah.
The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that Saint Nicholas soon would be there.
Scott, you brought up a point that I
come Dasher, come Dancer, come Comet and Blitzen. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. I think Scott's gotten into the eggnog a little bit early
Have you hit the eggnog already, Dan?
No, I woke up late and I've had like half a sip of coffee, I'm a little flaky. Go ahead.
I was listening to, unfortunately, it's pledge time for KPFK. So, you don't get the programming that you would get otherwise. But Margaret Prescott was interviewing, I think his name is Harry Giroux, G-I-R-O-U-X.
Giroux, yeah.
Giroux. And this man... Scott was saying about people being stingy. He was in. They were having a discussion on his book, Habit. I think it's called America at War with Itself or something. I ordered it. I just haven't started reading it yet. But anyway, what he talks about is, like you said, Scott, there's something in the air. And that we as progressives and liberals or whatever the fuck we're being called now. But there has been, there's an ushered in an air of cruelty in this country. He brought up, how they gave, the millionaires and billionaires this huge tax cut, but then you take away food stamps. you know.
Well, did you see the debate last night?
I didn't, honey. Let me tell you what I did last night. I came home. I made ginger garlic shrimp over soba noodles. I used my new treadmill for the first time, and it's a hoot. I love that thing. I mean, it has bells and whistles. I didn't even know you could have on a goddamn treadmill. And I took my happy black ass to bed because, like Bob calls them, they're pageants. And there's nothing, I can't imagine not one of those white motherfuckers, because there's not anybody that's on that stage, that was on that stage, that could, that looks anything remotely like me. So I seriously doubt that anybody was going to talk about anything that had anything to do with me. The only person I think that came close was Elizabeth Warren when she was talking about transgender women of color. That's
the reason I ask. Toward the very, very end, like in the last 15 minutes or so, Tom Steyer, who I don't like, made one of the most salient and brilliant summations of the situation that I had seen in a while.
Steyer.
He talked about the fact that there are forces and parties in this country and in the world, but in the country he was talking about, that have made cruelty an art form. He didn't say it quite this way, but he said from cradle to grave, they, without any reason to do it other than they can.
Well, and it's a money-making enterprise. Cruelty makes money. Yeah.
Yeah, but see if you can find that. That goes toward what you were mentioning and what I'm talking about. And at any given moment, people can consciously choose not to be a dick, not to be an asshole. But they got to choose that. And then they
got to choose it.
Yeah, you've got to live into it every day. Okay?
I mean, these people are like, you know, so that makes sense now, because I was listening to Democracy Now. Is that Amy Goodman? Is that?
Yeah.
She had a gentleman on. I didn't catch his name because I didn't hear, you know, I didn't hear the beginning of the interview. So that's what he was talking about, because I believe he wrote an article to that effect. And he's like, and he commented on what, because like I said, I didn't hear what he was talking about as far as Steyer. I just caught the tail end of the interview. And he said it was almost like Steyer read my article. So now I'm going to go.
He probably did.
Because, like you said, it doesn't really sound like something that Steyer would come up with on his own. But I mean, not to say that he did read the man's article, but now I'm going to go back and go and listen to Democracy Now! Podcast or whatever for today. Get the guy that wrote an article, but American Nightmare, I think that's what the book is called.
At the end of the debates, when they give they have 60 seconds to give the final pitch. I believe that's the portion of the debate when Steyer said that. So it shouldn't be too hard to find.
Well, you know, can I talk about Steyer for a little bit? I actually like the guy. After the debates on CNN, they have interviews with as many candidates as want to, you know, sit next to the panel and stuff. And they ask him questions.
Yeah,
and he elaborated on an answer he gave during the debate as to whether, you know, impeaching Trump would drive Republican turnout higher and make it, you know, harder for the Democrat, a candidate, to win. And he said, look, it doesn't really matter. Regardless, the Republicans are going to show up, but there's tens of millions more Democrats. And it's up to us to show up in overwhelming numbers. So there's no way that the Republican can win. Because, I mean, it's granted that you take it for granted Republicans are going to show up to vote. And it's about turnout. The Democrats have to.
I think that's absolutely true, Rick. I need somebody to straighten his ass out on this dumbass term limits bullshit.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
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 Yeah,
I was a proponent too until I got straightened out on term limits and came to an epiphany. Because at first glance, you think about it and you're like, well, yeah, I mean, makes sense that you have, you know, fresh blood, you know, in the electorate, you know, in the legislature and all this. On its surface, it sounds nice. But when you drill into the details, it doesn't make any sense because the lobbyists are then going to be the rulers.
Well, that's what's happened in the state of California with term limits. Basically, you know, legislators are only there. I think if you're like an assembly person, you're only there for like, I think, 3 2-year terms. If you're a senator, you can be there for like 2 5-year terms or whatever it is.
Well, that's unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional.
No, it's not. Well, it's not unconstitutional. That's the problem. It's just monumentally stupid.
Not constitutional.
Well, the states can decide. This is the state level. I was going to give an analogy. So basically, what's happened at the state level is the state of California has lost so many of its experienced legislators that they now have that the legislators who are there on term limited terms have to rely on lobbyists and outside industry people for the information. You know, they don't have their own expertise. That has empowered the lobbyists in California. So that's
where all the institutional knowledge lies, all the sausage making. They know how to make the sausage instead of, you know, the long term legislatures like
Right.
Would you rather have a doctor of 20 years or one that just started?
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You want a surgeon who's been out of medical school 5 years or one who's been out for 20 years? Probably the 20 years.
Yeah. How about somebody who, somebody who's done 3 surgeries or somebody who's done 3,000?
Right. Exactly. And the thing is, the idea of federal term limits doesn't work because there has to be a constitutional amendment for that to happen, because states have tried to affect the, they've tried to limit the federal terms for like House members, you know, to like 4 terms or whatever the number was. And it was struck down by the appellate courts. It might even have been struck down by the Supreme Court because as unconstitutional. So you actually have to have a constitutional amendment to have term limits like they did for the presidency, right?
Just imagine how different our country would be if Obama was still president.
If we still had
there
president. Can you imagine that?
Thinking the same thing,
Bill Clinton would have been reelected in 2000. Right. George W. Bush wouldn't have had a chance.
Right.
No chance.
And remember, the amendment that imposed term limits on the presidency was passed by a bunch of pissed off, butthurt Republicans because FDR had just about ruined them.
He kept going. He was like the Energizer Bunny.
And think about it. So in the aftermath of that, Eisenhower was too sick to run again in 60. Nixon quit before his second term was out.
Yep.
Reagan's mind had turned to cream of wheat by the end of his.
And he should have been impeached.
And people were aching to be rid of W.
Oh,
the only time you're going to have a more than 2-term president is if you've got a president who's really good at what they do, and the circumstances and the situation demand it. There was no term limit on the presidency all the way up until this amendment was passed, and yet nobody went for more than 2 terms. So
there was no reason for Clinton to leave. I mean, he actually had a bead down on Bin Laden. He tried to kill him, and then the Republicans all said, "Oh, wag the dog."
They're going after him.
Bush invaded Afghanistan and surrounded him on all 3 sides of the mountain.
And let him go.
Yeah.
And there was a deal made.
Tora Bora, baby.
Exactly. Tora Bora. Because he needed a boogeyman. It served his interest to keep him alive and on the run.
Absolutely right, Rick.
Scott, are you there?
Just one thing. I got a note from Darlene here. Give me a break, people. Just as a general point here, how do you get to 3,000 surgeries unless you've done those first 3? And that's absolutely true. And that's why we have residencies. Those first three, those first 10, the first 20, the first 30 are generally done when people are in their residencies and being supervised by the surgeon with the 3,000.
Right. Well, that's why you call them the VP, right?
Yeah, but, right. So, I mean, I think Darlene's point is well taken.
Absolutely.
Where term limits are concerned, I it may not happen in my lifetime, but I have a sneaking suspicion that there will come a time when we need a three-term president, and we will thoroughly and really fuck ourselves because we're going to run that president off after two terms because of an ill-advised constitutional amendment. That amendment was about as stupid as the amendment imposing prohibition. And you know what? It may happen in my lifetime because I can see a situation coming in the very near future where a three-term president might be able to do something about climate change that a two-term president could not.
Well, there's a long list of problems that call for continuity and a longer term approach. See, that goes back to the age of Reagan, the age of Thatcher, the age of crazy. Because so many of these things have gone either undone in the sense of we haven't handled them, or we give lip service to them, or people have been convinced not to give a shit. Again, more of the cruelty. It becomes a monumental thing because then you begin to have a longer and longer list of stuff that should have been attended to all along, but wasn't. And catch up is always a more expensive process than it's like housework. And I speak to myself when I say this. If you do the little bit of housework once a week, you don't have to panic and go into a crazy mode like a white tornado or the Tasmanian devil when company's coming, just to pull the place together to a reasonable shape of a dwelling space, you know?
So your house doesn't smell like gas, right?
Well, no, wait a minute. Have you been here? What do you know?
Thanks, Gordo.
Scott, I wanted to ask you before we get gone here, what is available for our viewing pleasure? There's nothing on TV. We're in kind of
Have you already run through the third season of Mrs. Maisel?
Yeah.
Well, I've got something that will surprise some of you that I would recommend this, but I found it to be entertaining and fascinating. And I got to look up the link, so bear with me. But it's not going to be anything new and recent and stuff. It's going to be a blast from the past. If you go to first of all, how many of you are at least 60 years old? Raise your hand. All right, my hand's up.
That's 6 years shy, but well, I'm very damn close.
All right, well, let's put it this way. How many of you remember a TV talk show, a TV talk host by the name of Joe Pyne, P-Y-N-E?
I've heard the name, but no.
All right. I think you mentioned this the other day, Scott.
Has he been pining for the fjords for a while, Scott?
Oh, he's been in the fjords for quite a few years. He was a one-legged, chain-smoking former Marine right winger of the 50s and 60s generation.
I'm sold. What's it called?
And he had he got his start back east in Pennsylvania, I think Philadelphia or somewhere in Delaware or somewhere, Wilmington, on talk radio, back when talk radio was like absolutely brand new. And he caught on and he came out to Los Angeles, did some time on KABC, back when it was a responsible radio station. And then in the early 60s, mid-60s, Metro Media, which was the fourth major TV channel owner back in that era that sold itself or merged or something into Fox later on, gave him a syndicated program that was seen all over the country.
It was WTTG out of D.C.
Yeah, Scott. that's where I used to watch it.
Yep, that's, anyway, it was your first Fox. Yep.
The name of the link is thefilmdetective.tv.
Writing and, that down.
And if you go into the little search thing and put in Joe Pyne, P-Y-N-E, you'll find about a dozen programs, and he has a lot of really off the wall guests, but he also has guests that have gone on to be heard of even in our generation. But anyway, it's funny, they
ain't shit on now, nothing.
Well, it's funny, it's entertaining, it also gives you a kind of a sense of how we got to be where we are now. Because if he, I think he died when he was like 52 or something. He was rather young.
And that's so, Joe Pyne from filmdetective.tv. Now, can you watch that on YouTube? Or?
I think there is an app. Or no, there's an app to look at the videos if you have Roku. Or you can just look at them on your
Roku. All right. And what's the app called on the Roku?
Well, you got to remember the website is the TV Detective. No, wait, shit. I got to go back and
film.
The computer.
It's film, isn't it?
The filmdetective.tv.
Hey, Steve, did you already watch the Roger Ailes?
Yeah, I done burned it up, bro. Yeah.
All right. And did you watch El Camino yet?
Oh, yeah, that was good.
That was really good. But we got to be quiet about that. Bob, right?
I'm a little bit skeptical about it, but I keep seeing promos, trailers for this movie 1917.
Oh. And that looks. El Camino, is that? I mean, who sponsors it? Showtime or?
Looks pretty good.
Amazon. I think it's. I'm sorry, Netflix. Okay. Netflix.
So
it's after, obviously, after Breaking Bad, right? You have to watch the entire Breaking Bad before you watch that, obviously.
It continues Jesse Pinkman's saga.
Right.
In a post-Breaking Bad.
Oh, shit. And that's on Netflix, El Camino.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a movie. It's not a miniseries. It's just a movie.
I would give it about the grade of a B. I saw it.
I'll go B+.
Okay.
Not A. I'll go B+.
Oh, here's a new thing, by the way. It's no surprise to find out that Donald Trump is a fucking idiot, but this is more like confirmation. He's calling for the impeachment of Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What a dick, man.
My God, he couldn't pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel. It's sometimes it's just breathtaking. Yeah, what a maroon.
What a maroon.
Exactly.
Bob, I've got a request because I've been out of the loop about a week. So I haven't been, following along in the Horn songbook. But I hope that it's the holiday season is what brought you to Alabama. I got the sense that something bad happened weather-wise or something, and you're now down there because of that.
No, not entirely. It's a story. It's something that I will relate later.
Okay.
But there are a couple of things at work. All is well back at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Agnes is holding down the fort. She and Ferg, and I'm down here.
Ferg okay, going just, okay, just, Bob? Did, you don't have to go into detail.
He's working at it, and he's
the late bloomer.
He's a wonderful young man.
Yes.
And he's working on his sobriety.
We all take left turns, brother.
Yeah.
Every one of us.
And but anyway, I'll talk more about it later. Okay. But it enabled me to do this experimentation with video, and this is really boring. And the camera angle is cutting off the top of my head. because what's behind because what
scrunch down a little bit in the chair, Bob. Lower the chair and you'll be fine.
because what's happening?
I thought it was just the chest. Yeah.
No, what's behind me? What's behind me is a mirror.
Oh.
And so if I brought the mirror into it, A, there'd be a bunch of glare and it'd look like I have a fucking halo, and we all know I don't have one of those. And you'd have a lovely view. And you would have
God
a lovely
Bob.
And you'd have a lovely view of the kitchen.
Lifted him up from the depths of the
and the mirror would reflect the view of the kitchen. Hold on.
Okay, go ahead.
I've got to send out some thanks because Tracy's anti-Scrooge challenge got met. Thank you, Tracy. And so thanks go out to Anatole, and thanks go out to Stephen. Thank you very kindly. And so that takes us down to $90 to go. And we've got a kind offer from Ralph's to double the next $10 that come in. And so that would take us down to 70. So we got about 40 minutes to make to pull together $90. Hopefully that can happen. But thank you very kindly to Anatole and Stephen. Thanks for thanks to Yuki and Samuel earlier today. And thanks to Tracy for making the challenge. Thank you so much. So the next $10 gets doubled courtesy of Ralph's. And then we'll slowly work our way down through that. That having been said, I also have a viewing tip from Ron in Raleigh, who says that if people haven't watched The Expanse on Amazon, seasons 1 through 3 are available there, and the new season 4 is up, I guess, at Hulu. And I agree with Ron when he says it's the best sci-fi of this decade.
Yeah, my son is into that. I haven't really gotten into that yet, but it looks pretty good. I've seen some episodes with him, you know.
And going back to Joe Pyne, Randy informs us that he had a short-lived game show on NBC that was on in the morning called Showdown.
I forgot about that. God damn. I wonder if there's any video of that. It's hard to imagine him as a game show host, unless it involved inflicting embarrassment on the contestants, like they drop them into a tank or something, cold water, or
like one of those slimy, what was that? What, Nickelodeon?
Yeah, slime.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Darlene in Connecticut joined the conversation. Let's check in with, hey, Darlene, how are you?
Hey, Bob. Hi, everyone. I'm only here. I just wanted to drop in really quickly, and then I have to leave and go back to cooking. But I
what's for dinner?
On that point that I raised about I'm making brownies, and then I'm going to do a tenderloin steak.
Yummy.
And then, yeah.
Are these special brownies, Darlene? Are these really good, groovy?
Not, unfortunately, not in Connecticut. Not in Connecticut yet. Not legal in Connecticut yet.
You're working on it, though.
Poor me. Yeah.
These brownies are delicious, man.
The point that I raised in the email about the, you know, you can't get to the 3,000 surgeries unless you do the 3. And then Bob was talking about, residencies. Surgeons that do residencies. Well, it brought to mind in a parallel sense Elijah Cummings, the late Elijah Cummings, who was known to mentor young freshman representatives coming in into Congress, and that he would always ask Nancy Pelosi, who can I mentor? Who can I help? Who can I work with? And guide them through these, you know, their early days as freshmen. He will be greatly missed in that respect as well. So I just wanted to throw that out as a parallel. I want to say congratulations, Billable, on your hole in one, and I thoroughly enjoyed your music video on Billy Idol. yell that's not but it was very enjoyable to watch that. And Steve, you're welcome. And Steve, I'm sorry about last week. I think I inadvertently kept cutting you off. I could not hear you, and I apologize. You are a genteel and urbane gentleman, and I'm really sorry about that. Love you all.
No worries, none. If you're talking to me,
I'm talking to you, sir. I'm talking
okay.
to you.
Well,
you're
no talking worries to me. At all. You can cut me off anytime you want.
No, never. I didn't mean to do that. I'm really enjoying it. I could not hear you. Always raise great points. Everybody does. Love you all. I got a jet, so I'll
hopefully love back, okay.
Take care. Love you too, Darlene.
Happy
holidays. Darlene, have a lovely weekend.
Enjoy those brownies.
Yes.
Happy holidays, all of you. I will.
All right.
Not too many of them, but all right.
Good night. Bye-bye,
take care.
Bye, Darlene.
Bye.
Oh, that's wonderful. We have such a wonderful and kind and decent community. That's imagine Darlene's been thinking about that all week, and took a moment to apologize in case she had caused any offense to Steve. I mean,
I never even gave it a thought, Bob.
Yeah, I know, but the fact that we think about these things. It's a marvel. And by the way, thank you, Steve, and Ms. Karen, and little Cletus, and little Twiggy.
Yeah, that was Cletus. She went out in the yard and dug up a bone, so I was able to cash it in for 10 spots.
You're awesome. So Ralph's challenge has been met. And I just had a note from Rico in DeBerg. Merry impeachment challenge. Not sure where you are with fundraising, but would like to put up a $45 challenge in honor of Dolt 45's well-deserved impeachment. I know this is late in the program, but worked all day and then had to put my lovely little kitty Annie to sleep. Aww. Thank you. Rico says, love you, Bob, and all of the community. Well, the love is returned, Rico, by all of us to you. And happy holidays. And so there is... if Rico's challenge is met in the next 35 minutes, we're done with the week.
Well, love back, brother. Scott, what you got for me, man? I know you got
to I did happen to think of something that I can recommend even without seeing it, because in the run-up to it...
Uh-oh, we're running blind, huh? Okay.
Well, I've heard so many good things about it that there's no way it can be bad. You've heard of Hal Holbrook, the actor...
Oh, yeah.
Deep throat in All the President's Men and all kinds of roles over the years.
He's Mark Twain.
He's most well known for his portrayal on stage of Mark Twain. Well, somebody done made a documentary about it.
Oh, really?
He was married to one of those Golden Girls, too.
Carter, I thought.
Yes, that's the one. Yes, sir.
Yeah. But it's called Holbrook/Twain, An American Odyssey. And it's a documentary that chronicles, it, according to Amazon Prime, the triumph and tumultuous history of the longest-running one-man show in history of theater. The film is a celebration of this masterpiece, an examination of the joys and struggles of an actor's life, and a strikingly relevant one, one-to-one ode to one of our country's most important, provocative, and enduring writers, Mark Twain. And it's called Holbrook/Twain, An American Odyssey. And it's on Amazon Prime for like $4.
Ooh, awesome.
Well, that's why
Holbrook's still with us? I'm sorry.
Yeah. He's not doing the show anymore. The one
How old is
show.
He now?
Oh, he's got to be every he's bit 70. Of 90.
90s?
No, he's 90. Yeah, at least.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. He's been around forever. I remember he was in Capricorn 1.
I forgot about the fake
Mars landing movie.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that's why you guys are so cool. Come TV, I was dry as dust. I've already seen Mrs. Maisel. There was nothing left. I said, well, let me ask the Horn community. Now I got El Camino with Jesse Pinkman. I'm looking forward to that. This Hal Holbrook thing looks cool. This Joe Pye thing looks cool. You know.
Did you ever watch The Americans, the TV series about the Russian?
I really want to see that, Scott.
Oh God, that's so good. Agnes
and I started on that and watched it all the way through, and it was awesome. And of course, our buddy Dan Fisher was props master on the last two seasons.
Cool.
I think it was originally on FX. It's either on Amazon Prime or Netflix.
Maybe Hulu. Hulu.
No, it is on Amazon Prime.
Okay, Prime. Got it.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, we haven't heard from him in a while. How's he doing?
I was just talking with Dan today. He's been working working like a dog.
So heart working okay for him?
Yeah, heart's doing good, and he's doing good. Nice. And I heard from him today, and he said his kids
are
coming.
That's a miracle. It really is.
His kids are coming in. He and Helene's kids are coming in for Christmas, and he'll probably be on the air for a conversation Thursday, the day after Christmas.
Cool.
How cool is that? Something to look forward to.
Oh, without a doubt.
Get all your movie questions together because he can answer them.
Oh, yes, he can. And we're going to try to do a little year in review kind of thing.
Well, that's awesome.
That's a great idea.
I appreciate you bringing him on, Bob. I really do.
So, hey, I got a question. Bull season. So, you know, you were talking about Steve, you got nothing to watch, but, you know, we are headed into college football bowl season. Anybody got that on their calendar that they're really looking at? I know Notre Dame, for me, I don't know which day that bowl is.
All the teams.
Iowa State against Notre Dame.
Petered out. Yeah,
it's Iowa State.
Petered. And it's USC against Iowa on the 27th, the Holiday Bowl. I wanted to go down there to see it, but don't know if I can afford it, unfortunately.
So you're a Hawkeye fan.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Not Cyclones. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay.
To change gears, Chris, Better Call Saul. I mean, he's coming back again. I believe it's January, February, so it won't be long.
Okay, yeah. Good. I can't wait for that. Good. I was going to ask about that. So, I mean, it should be fun. The championship bowls should be really a lot of fun. Great games. Tremendous matchups. If they even come close to the Alabama-Auburn game, I mean, that's all you can hope for.
Yeah. Well, that was, and not just because it's Alabama-Auburn. Once again, that was one of the best football games I've ever watched in my life, and it didn't even come out to my liking.
Oh, man.
I agree with that.
Just on the edge of the couch the whole time,
It was just incredible all the way through.
It just doesn't get any better than that. It really doesn't,
Well coached. Well executed, not a lot of penalties. I think in the second half there were some more penalties, but not in the first half from what I remember. I think it was just a
Alabama killed themselves with penalties.
That's right. Mostly in
I don't even know if they would have won if Tua had been healthy.
Well, tempers get flaring, passions get overflowing, and that's what causes all these penalties. I get it,
It's emotional.
Yes. Yep.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to the bowl games. That'll be my focus up until the football season's over. My Bears are dead, so.
My Mountaineers are going to be watching all the bowl games. So
and the SEC is pretty much buried, So. But I hate to sound cliche, but there's always next year. There really is.
Sure. Sure.
Hopefully. Yeah, for over 100 years for the Mountaineers, it's been maybe next year.
Yep. Bob.
Have they ever won a championship, Bob?
They are the most successful major college football program never to have won a national championship.
And some of these rivalries go back to Reconstruction.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yale Harvard is, we're talking 1870s, maybe 18, something like that.
Well, what was the first game was between Rutgers and Lafayette or something.
Okay.
They didn't wear helmets. They just wore like leather.
I don't know what that noise is.
They didn't even to begin with at the start. They didn't even wear leather hats.
No hats, huh?
Yeah, it was.
Like, what's that leather? What's that going to protect? Nothing.
And it came. The game came close to being killed outright by Teddy Roosevelt because young men were dying.
Oh. Well, yeah, head to head with leather straps on your head. Shit, man. But we are where we are, and things are getting better, and it's getting more exciting.
I think the rule changes, to hit that point, Bob, the rule changes seem to have made a difference, and I think that blue tent is helping with concussions.
Yeah, I think so, too.
It seems like they're, you know, they've done some good things, but, I mean, with all the evil, I mean, they were doing the same thing that the tobacco industry was. Hiding all the evidence, you know, that pointed to the brain injuries as a result of, you know, those collisions. And but I think they're trying to make it right as best as they can.
Speaking of sports gear, I read a statistic that blew me away when I saw it. The invention of the athletic cup, you know, for your crotch. There went dinner. Like 20 years or more.
Before, did it sweat?
No. Listen, I'm trying. The invention of the athletic cup happened like 20 years earlier than the invention of the helmet. You know, if we're talking about hockey.
Well, at least they knew what to protect. You know.
Well, yeah, and that's where I was. That's where I was going.
Fuck the big head.
the little head and the big head. That ongoing, endless battle.
Well, we can always count on you, Scott.
Scott carried us through
this. Great minds, brother. Great minds, man.
Well, what can I say?
Great small heads.
I've got a question, Bob. I've got a question about this impeachment holding the articles back from the Senate temporarily. Is that a good move or not? Because the other day, I thought I heard McConnell come out, stick his head out of his turtle shell long enough to say, well, you know, why would we be upset that they're not people. Sending something that we never wanted in the first place?
American people.
Well, yeah, he said, if she wants to hold them and we don't not have a trial, well, throw me into that briar patch. Racist.
So, I mean, she's been fairly brilliant thus far. It doesn't make sense that she would make a boneheaded move this far along in the process.
No, she knows exactly what she's doing. I'm convinced of that.
She's playing every card that she can, and she doesn't, I mean, at this point, she only has so many cards.
I say this with some hesitation, but what she's doing is... It's a water torture sort of it's a sort of mental water torture on him because he's got donkey ears and she can just reach out and yank him anytime she wants to and he'll bray.
Where's that Bruno? Yeah, we need him.
And so every time she does this, his blood pressure goes up a couple of points. And one of these days, he's just going to go
pop. He's just going to pop the big one. Yep,
pop goes the weasel. It'll be like Slim Whitman singing in Mars Attacks, you know.
Either an aneurysm or a heart valve. One of them's got to give sooner or later, you know.
Because he's not a well man.
Go ahead, Bob.
No, that's all I was saying. He's not a well man.
Do you think that she's trying to bring out the Jack Nicholson code red, you know, out in him?
Yeah.
You can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
Damn right I did.
That's the thing. She's outmaneuvering Moscow Mitch because, like I said earlier, he had, and you know, Precious Lindsay and whatnot. Stop it, Raul. Stop it. You're incorrigible.
Yeah, I've got a case of the vapors.
Now, he and Lindsay had nitwit Nero calm down a little bit so that he wasn't hollering,
yeah, I want witnesses. I want lots of witnesses. I want to have a big trial. It'd be the fabulous trial. It'd be the most awesome impeachment trial. And I want to call Shifty Schiff, and I want to call Nancy Pelosi. And, it, you know, right?
Call them. Great.
Well, they didn't want to because they knew how toxic that would be. And especially, they knew that if they put him under oath in his own trial, he will self-impeach.
Oh, no question.
Okay? So they had him backed away from all that. They, you know, he was. They were going to do this cover-up, not a trial, but a cover-up. And then it was just going to go away. Okay? And then Nancy Pelosi did this, and all of a sudden, he's losing his mind again. And the adult daycare department of the GOP is like, oh fuck, she did it to us again. God damn it.
You know, and if they do call the Bidens, let them. And then we need to get Ivanka in there, and Donnie Jr. and Eric, and who's the son that's working for Barr now?
Julianne.
Who?
Yeah, Giuliani's son is working there, the $90,000 job.
Yeah, call his ass and call Rudy and, you know, say, hey, this guy isn't qualified to be in that department, you know. Let's just call him all. Hey, why not?
Oh, and by the way, speaking of Butthead or Uday or whatever, you know, Don Jr., the Spanish law enforcement authorities have given the FBI wiretaps of conversations involving Alexander Torshin, and he's one of those crooked Russian bankers, and he's the guy who met with Junior back in 2016, and when Jose Grinda, a Spanish prosecutor who spearheads investigations into organized crime, was asked if he was concerned about Torshin's interactions with Butthead or other American political figures, Grinda replied, Mr. Trump's son should be concerned.
Sweet. Yeah, call him too.
And and by the way, I didn't mention it last night, but they had a big shootout in Moscow on Lubyanka Square, which is where the headquarters of the FSB are, last night. And I was sitting there thinking, well, you know, all that hollering about wanting a Second Amendment gun rights for Russia looks like they're paying off. But Torshin and Alexander attended a separate NRA dinner on the same night at the convention in Cleveland. And the FBI has wiretaps of the guy. And now, courtesy of the Spanish. He said, Jose Grinda, the investigator, said Spanish authorities had turned over the transcripts a few months ago. And a guy named Romanov referred to Torshin as El Padrino, which is Spanish for godfather. And Torshin is closely connected to who? Maria Butina, who did all the monkey business with the National Prayer Breakfast and the NRA. It's going to keep getting weirder. It just is.
Not a surprise. You know, that's what you've been saying, Bob. Every day it's going to get a little stranger.
Yeah. And shit's getting hot all over the planet. India turned off the internet in its own capital today.
So did China.
Thousands of people are in the streets protesting the Modi government because of a new law that these Hindu fascists have passed to make it harder for Muslims get citizenship. And when people began protesting it, Hindu and Muslim alike, this is a first. They've turned the internet off for months in Kashmir, but turning it off in the nation's capital is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that's a completely fascist country now.
Doesn't that cripple their economy, Bob? I mean, think about it. No internet, Bob, Steve, we don't work.
Yeah, what happens?
And I'm sure there's 10,000 Bobs and Steves or 10 million of us out there, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, what happens to the call centers? Because the only thing that makes those things economically viable is voice over internet protocol telephony.
Back when internet was first, everybody was trumpeting the, you know, bridge to the 21st century, and newspapers, books, magazines, films, and everything were going to be
AOL,
a click away.
Floppy,
yeah. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. In the back of my mind, I said, "Well, that's all well and good that content and information is so easily available, but you've got two downsides. Downside number one is whenever there's a printing press, there's always going to be some fool who is going to print stuff that's horseshit. And people are going to be dumb enough to read it and say, well, gee whiz, that's right on, you know. Or if things get really hairy, there's got to be some master switch somewhere. And I don't think they've built into the deal where there's no way to turn the thing completely off in case of insurrection or whatever. Or maybe they have, and I just missed the story about it. But that's always struck me as a dangerous downside to the internet. If we put all of our information capability into the cloud or whatever, or the bits and bytes.
Yeah, everything is cloud-based now, Scott.
Is there a master switch that if the government said
yes.
No?
Yes.
Well, then that with Trump, you know, going for two or three terms or something, and, or someone like him. Or,
and please remember, Scott, we're still operating under a national emergency.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, the yeah, going hands. Back. Yeah, yeah. Jesus.
Hey, going can back I add one more child? Can I add one more child to the witness list?
Yeah.
Don't forget Anthony Kennedy's kid.
Yeah, that
add him to the list, right?
Deutsche Bank.
Yeah.
We're all screwed, Bob.
That's don't step on Scott's lines.
He doesn't.
We're all screwed, Bob. Well, but see, I was right. I ought to post this on my I had it in response to some comments that somebody made on someone else's Facebook thread. I got to thinking about it the other day, and I wasn't kidding when I said at any given moment, anybody who could be the biggest asshole on God's green earth could wake up in the morning and on something could get through to him or her, and they could say, well, today I'm going to start approaching life differently. I'm going to get my head out of my ass and behave in a appropriate, positive way.
Turning off that goddamn internet. Fuck it, man.
You know, it just at any given moment, people can freely choose. What did Mark Twain say? Always do right. It will gratify some and astonish the rest. Well, we're due to be astonished, I think. And there's a fair number of
You're not going to get astonished by Donald Trump.
Well, no, there are. Well, wait a minute. Even Trump, I'll bet you, if it came right down to it,
you're
you
not.
Know,
you're really not.
I don't think so. Well, okay, well, maybe not Trump. Maybe he's a hard case.
You know, and
Scott,
what?
Can I interrupt for 1 second?
Yeah, go, Chris.
Scott? Oh, I have another nickname. and I don't know if this has been used already, but how about the unhinged Oompa Loompa?
that's got potential. That's got some power. Oh, and since the Facebook video's back up again, I don't know if Tracy saw it last time, so I just wanted to. Yuzu, Trader Joe's. It makes me happy. And the emergency Tootsie Pop remains unused.
Well, there's a shot of him playing tennis where his ass is
whiter
than a Mac.
Ah, don't.
And he's got white shorts.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. I was thinking about eating after the program, but
I can't get enough mind bleach to purge that, man.
There's a fucking Christmas dinner for everyone.
I'm sorry, man.
Well, they could. I think for Christmas, he's probably going to make a secret, an unannounced trip to a surprise trip to one of the aircraft carriers somewhere. And when night falls, he's going to stand on the deck and bend over, and they're going to show White Christmas on his ass, you know, with Rosemary Clooney and Danny Kaye and Bing Crosby.
I just watched.
Oh, the visuals, the visuals.
Talk about widescreen. Cinerama.
Hey, Scotty, both those women in White Christmas from the greater Cincinnati area. It's kind
of
I
know. God, I love
it. Hey, Joe.
Bad movie either.
Joe, how are you?
Fair to them.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate it, Chris. I'm doing okay, buddy. Thanks.
How you doing, Joe?
Good in Ohio?
Hey, Steve.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Rick.
Oh, it's good to hear from Brother Joe, man.
So I appreciate that. Thank you.
I think Rogers, is Roger still with us from down in Peru?
Oh, he was there?
He is there.
I hope I am.
There you are.
Am I coming in?
You're loud and clear.
Howdy, howdy. Yeah, well, I'm several thousand miles away from you, but internet's a wonderful thing.
Hey, it's the first day of summer down there. Be prepared.
Roger,
we don't see the sun too much where I am because it's foggy all day, but that's just Lima summer weather.
So you near Carnival?
No. I'm in Lima proper.
Hey, Roger, could I make a suggestion?
Sorry about that.
If your internet is cooperative, and you look back, just look up on the internet to find out when Anthony Bourdain did his Peru episode. He went in this little hole in the wall dive in Lima. And got just a mind-bending bowl of ceviche.
Well, you can get mind-bending bowls of ceviche in any decent restaurant. I had octopus ceviche today.
Nice.
And I had regular fish ceviche yesterday. So I know my food down here. This is about my, I don't know, fifth or sixth time here in Peru.
Roger,
I lived here for a year.
That's awesome, bro.
You can get guinea pig on a stick, right?
Well, you can get guinea pig any way you want it.
Yeah,
it's called cooey.
So, but you couldn't ride there to like North Georgia mountains, could you? Because of El Salvador, you get hung up and you might end up getting your head sawed off on TV and all that shit. Is that true? Or?
Well, you can't drive from the United States to Peru.
It looks like you could. It's all landlocked. I mean,
Northern Colombia is jungle, and there's no road through Northern Colombia. In other words, south of Panama, you run into some serious problems.
If we get a ferry boat from Panama to run a road through there, you could. But it's not probably.
There's no road through the jungle in northern Colombia.
What happened to that highway that back in the 60s they were working on? That would go from Alaska.
It goes from Alaska
and goes down through Panama and gets stopped in the jungle and then picks up again
right
just south of the jungle in Colombia
right
and you goes all the way to
keep
here
cruising through.
No. It took a British team, I think it was 2 months, and they did manage to hack their way through the swamps and all that and did make a drive one time, but it was a British military expedition that did it. And they used different vehicles at different parts of it. But they did drive from Point Barrow in Alaska to Tierra del Fuego.
But you know, with the excavating technology we have now, it could be done if we wanted to sink the bucks and time and man effort into it.
They should have Brazil's president just burn the forest down and they'll be fine. Then the road will go through no problem, right?
Absolutely.
It's a wet jungle in northern Colombia.
But wouldn't that be a fun ride, though? Gee. Mm.
Well, it'd take you about a year to do it.
You'd have yellow fever, Steve.
Well, I'm not talking time constraints or insect-borne diseases. I'm just saying, wouldn't that be cool if you could pull it off, you know?
Well, yeah, it would be great, and there's all kinds of stuff to see all the way along the line. I'm not trying to put anybody on the downer.
No, I know you're not, brother, but it's kind of like hiking the Appalachian Trail, where you go all the way from, you know, Georgia all the way up into Maine. That takes about a year to do.
That's
on foot.
Goes from Mexico to Canada.
Yep.
Oh, hey, Roger.
Yeah.
Darlene's feeling a little frisky. Subject line, can't resist. Can you ask Roger if there's any coconut crabs in Peru? If not, please ask him to regale us with the most unusual dish he's had there.
No, there's no coconut crabs.
I'm not sure. I want to know.
Back in when I was a little bit poor, I
bull
was in
testicles.
And ordered the special of the day. And I didn't know what it was. Then it was cooey. And they brought this thing out to me, and it looked like a guinea pig had come running out of its cage, and they dropped a brick on it, and its paws were all flayed out. They're a rabbit-type animal, and the buck teeth were poking out over the top, and they fried it. They just fried it, and they brought it out on the plate, and it was the most unappetizing thing I'd ever seen. I ate it, and I haven't eaten any since.
Well, did it taste like chicken?
No, it tasted like rattlesnake.
Was it like smiling at you? On the plate?
It was like chicken, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was smiling at me on the plate.
Oh, Jesus. I hesitate to eat anything. I mean, there have been times when I've eaten something that was smiling, but it wasn't in that context. It wasn't in a restaurant.
I guess if you're hungry enough, right, Scott?
Well,
that's like the line. That's like Darren McGavin's line in A Christmas Story, where they go and get the goose, and they bring it with the head on, and he said, "It's smiling at me."
Oh, jeez.
The guy takes the
cleaver and hacks its head off.
God, I love that movie.
One little other tidbit. The reason for this trip is my father-in-law died in June, and he was Peruvian. And so we're down here, and we've got three separate celebrations of life happening between now and New Year's. No. So this is a strictly business trip, although the wife and I are going to get up to Corral, and we are going to get 3 or 4 days in the northeastern jungle, just between the celebrations of life for a little bit of relaxation. But so far we've just been running around trying to get death benefits and burial benefits.
If you're in the middle of a sad situation, make the best out of it. What the hell else can you do? I'm sure that's what happened.
And Roger, our condolences to your wife's family.
Absolutely. Sincerely,
he was 95. So it wasn't unexpected or anything like that. But it's not an easy trip this time down, and all kinds of family stuff and this thing. And we were at the club, and they thought it was some kind of a party and wanted to bring in a band. And we told them, no, it wasn't a party. It was a luncheon and a memorial kind of thing. So it's been a drain, but I'm staying in a really nice place. If anybody wants to look it up, called Posada Monte Rico. And if you look it up on the internet, it's a private home, belongs to my wife's cousin, and it's got a beautiful garden and beautiful accommodation, and all the rest of it. But Posada Monte Rico is where I'm staying. Of course, my picture won't be in anything you see on the internet.
Nice. Well, I'm geographically challenged, bro. Pinpoint for me, if you don't mind.
Lima, Peru.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
On the Pacific coast of Peru, about halfway between Chile and Ecuador.
If you're a seafood fan, you can't. There's no better place.
Oh, if you swim a little while, Steve, you can go see the turtles, the Galapagos turtles.
Well, thanks.
Well, you got to get up. Basically, you got to get up to Ecuador and take a flight. I've always wanted to get out there, but I've never had the coin to make it.
If you're easily scared, don't you think about the monsters inside me that show or anything? Or
No.
You wouldn't think about that, Bob?
No. Well, hey, we have reached the end of the program. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Continued safe travels, Roger. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Sparky. Thanks, everybody, for jumping in and participating.
I enjoyed it. Thanks, everybody. I love you guys, man.
And by all means, have a wonderful pre-holiday weekend. For those of you who celebrate the goddess, a very happy winter solstice to you. Thanks to everybody who jumped in to get us as close on fundraising as we did. We're going to finish with Rico's challenge, Rico's Dolt 45 challenge, happy impeachment challenge on the table. And if that's met by the overnight crew or through the course of the weekend, that will mean that we will start with just a nice, ordinary fundraising goal on Monday. So thank you. Thank you, Rico. And thanks, everybody. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging with this ongoing conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky for moderating the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, as he does this evening, as he always does. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. Have a great weekend.